In 1860, Reverend William Jackson, an African-American and self-declared convert to Unitarianism, attended the American Unitarian Association's annual conference. On the last day of the convention, Jackson stood up to publicly address this otherwise white convention and claim his place in Unitarianism in America. This could have been a profound moment for the American Unitarian Association. They could have warmly welcomed Reverend Jackson and pledged to support his ongoing ministry and the very first African American Unitarian Church. Instead, they took up a small collection of $49 and sent him on his way. In 1920, Reverend Ethelred Brown founded the Harlem Unitarian Church, which became the most prominent African-American Unitarian congregation in the 20th century. But rather than encourage and support this congregation, the American Unitarian Association largely ignored it. In fact, the AUA found Reverend Brown's solicitations for support annoying, and in 1929 they dropped him from fellowship. His fellowship was only reinstated years later after a lawsuit. In 1932, Reverend William Carter opened the Unitarian Brotherhood Church in a black neighborhood in Cincinnati. This congregation was founded by and for Unitarian African Americans. Carter was never admitted into Unitarian fellowship by the AUA, nor did his church receive official recognition or financial support from the association. Isolated and unsupported, this church closed its doors in 1940. In 1963, just after the merger of the Unitarians and the Universalists, the General Assembly gathered, and they rejected a resolution that would have required congregations to drop racially discriminatory restrictions from their bylaws. In October 1967, an emergency conference of the Unitarian Universalist response to the Black Rebellion gathered at the Biltmore Hotel in New York. The vast majority of African Americans who attended that conference withdrew to hold their own meeting and thus formed the Black Unitarian Universalist Caucus. This group organized and requested funding from the Unitarian Universalist Association to support Black Unitarian Universalists and Black empowerment projects across the country. At the following General Assembly in 1968, a grant for $1 million to support this effort over 4 years was approved. It was a contentious decision during a tumultuous time. Some UUs supported Black separatism, and others were calling for Black and white unity. In the years that immediately followed this decision, controversy erupted. By 1970, controversy, conflict, and a huge budget crisis resulted in the full funding of this promise not being awarded, and an estimated 1,000 Black Unitarian Universalists leaving the denomination for good. In 1978, Thomas Paine was called to serve the First Unitarian Church of Roxbury. White pilgrims founded this church in 1636. It once sat 1,500 people. But in the 20th century, as Roxbury transitioned into a black neighborhood and white flight took hold in America, the church declined. By the time Paine arrived in 1978, there were 13 members of this congregation. Evidently, UUs had not been able or interested in doing much outreach in the black community in Roxbury. It wasn't until 1993 that we finally had a hymn book, the gray hymnal that we use, that you see in front of you in the pews, that was racially inclusive and included music and readings from the African American tradition. And it was in 2017 that the first Latinx president of our Unitarian Universalist Association, Peter Morales, stumbled royally at a gathering of Unitarian Universalist people of color during a question and answer session. He was asked why there are so few leadership positions at the top level of the UUA held by people of color, and he responded that there were not enough qualified applicants in the pool. Now, ironically, a number of applicants who had applied for such positions were in the room, at that time and felt stung by the president's response. One of these applicants decided to speak out. Cristina Rivera made it public in March 2017 that she had been told she was not the right fit for the position she applied for. Of course, we'll never know the details of the hiring process. It's illegal for those involved to comment on it or discuss personnel details. But regardless of any of the particulars, Rivera's brave decision to speak out has shone a light once again on a part of our tradition that doesn't look very good on us. People of color are denied opportunities in our association and discriminated against. Historically, as I have illustrated, we have not done a particularly good job of being racially inclusive. We fail to do outreach in the black community. We haven't supported the black leaders and the black congregations that have emerged among us. We have centered whiteness, and we've kept ourselves white. We're not exclusively white, of course not. Despite all of this, people of color are here in our denomination. Black and brown folks lead some of our congregations as ministers and religious educators. Black and brown folks are members, friends, and visitors of our congregations all of the time. And black and brown children make up a larger percentage of our religious education programming than they ever have before. So, people of color who have grown up in our tradition or come into our churches are drawn every day to it because they are drawn to liberal religion and free thinking just like everyone else who is here. But as we heard from Dr. Takiya Nur Amin, people of color don't always have a positive experience in our congregations. My deep sadness, she says, as a Unitarian Universalist, is that while this faith community has always been a place that welcomed my varied religious heritage, my blackness hasn't always felt at home here. And that is a powerful statement. I wonder what you think of that. I wonder if People's Church is a community that welcomes blackness. I wonder if we are a community that centers and honors the experiences of people of color. This is exactly what we are being called to do in 2017. You see, Black Lives of UU and religious educators of color in our Unitarian Universalist movement have had enough. At this moment in our history right now, they are calling on us all over the country to address white supremacy in our association and to move aside so that people of color can lead us into a more just and equitable future. As a part of this effort, a request by people of color went out all over the country to UU congregations to host a white supremacy teach-in. And so that's what we're doing today. We are one of more than 650 Unitarian Universalist congregations all over the country that are having this conversation and trying to discern a better way forward. Now, a little bit about the word white supremacy. When I hear that word, from my perspective, I personally don't have a reaction to it one way or the other. It registers within me as simply a statement of fact, kind of like talking about gravity. I understand that it describes a force in reality that impacts me and everybody else. I also know that the phrase white supremacy is extremely jarring and unpleasant and difficult to hear. And that's not just white people that are having that experience, because you see, last week when I was at the Regional Assembly in Chicago, I had many, many interesting conversations about it. And I wanted to tell you a little story. After worship one night at Regional Assembly, I was with two other white women, and we were talking with three black people outside of the worship service. And one senior black man said to us, he said, "You know, I was really enjoying that service until they used that word white supremacy." And he said, "I want to tell you something." And he looked me in the eye and he said, "You are not a white supremacist." And then he looked at my friends and said, "And you are not a white supremacist. And you are not a white supremacist." And I took that in. I was, you know, a little surprised to have had that experience with him. Because at the same conference, I had been listening to people of color describe the pain of being a black or brown Unitarian Universalist. And I had been hearing a specific request to ask Unitarian Universalists to reflect on our culture of white supremacy and to specifically use that phrase on purpose. So there I was going, okay, so what do I do with all of this, and which perspective do I honor because there are so many? What does it all mean? And how do I, a white, lifelong Unitarian Universalist who's always felt like Unitarian Universalism was a home for me, I have always felt comfortable and like I fit in here. What do I make of all this? And how do I reconcile my experience with Takiya's experience of being a Black Unitarian Universalist? To wrap my mind around it, I've been reflecting a lot this week on the words of Travis Geddes. He writes this: "White supremacy is so deeply ingrained in American life that institutionalized racism doesn't even need racists to persist. Most Americans understand that racism is considered wrong, but many white people fail to see more subtle forms of racial prejudice that are more readily apparent to Blacks and other minorities." So what that Black man said to me at Regional Assembly is true. I am not an overt white supremacist. None of us are as Unitarian Universalists. I am not a part of the KKK. I'm not a skinhead or a Nazi. Those kinds of explicit groups and behaviors are morally reprehensible. They are not you in the slightest. They could not embody a theology farther away from mine or more disgusting to me. I am you. And I know our UU principles and liberal religious theology call us to respect and fairness and equality. So what do I make of all this? Why does a short history of the experiences of Black folks in our movement and the testimony of Black folks today in our movement, like the one we heard from Dr. Takiya Nur Ahmed, point to discrimination and a culture that centers whiteness? We are not white supremacists who act in overtly repulsive ways. But we are being asked directly by people of color and our association to take a look at our history and our culture, a culture that has centered whiteness and hurts our Black and brown siblings of faith. When we look at it this way, white supremacy is a description of the water we're swimming in, the culture that unconsciously centers whiteness. It is racism that doesn't even need overt racists to function. This is true today just as it was in the 1960s. In his 1963 letter from a Birmingham jail, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote this: "I must confess that over the past few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice. Shallow understanding from people of good will is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection," says Dr. King in 1963. As my colleague Reverend Seth Carrier Ladd says, substitute liberal for moderate today, and I fear you could make much the same critique of many white liberals, especially when it comes to understanding and acknowledging structural racism. It's easy to understand. Structural racism is invisible. Whiteness is invisible. It flourishes when we don't see it and when we don't talk about it. I grew up not seeing it. I didn't notice it. But I do remember the moment that I saw my whiteness for the first time. As I listened to a professor in a college course talk about the history of whiteness, the scales literally fell from my eyes. I was 20 years old. 20 years before I realized that I was complicit in a racist system. My heart broke. I had no idea who I was or what to do anymore. And if you're feeling that way today, I want you to know that you're not alone. I'm available if you want to talk about racial identity. If you are somewhere new on your journey to race consciousness today, and we all are every day because the learning never ends, and I am not an expert, but I would love to talk with you about it and be on that journey with you, especially if you're feeling angry, defensive, sad, or in despair, please don't keep that to yourself. Come talk to me or talk to other white people. Please don't burden people of color and ask them to educate you or process your feelings for you. They do enough of that already. And so I will be downstairs in the Andre room after service if anybody would like to talk about racial identity. And I know that the Social Justice Committee will also be downstairs in the Andre room after the service to talk about and reflect on this service and what we might do with this call that has been put forth from Black Lives of UU. So I hope you will join us. As we move along on this journey of anti-racism, I know that there is, of course, that impulse to do something, right? And so I just invite you to think that you don't have to do anything in particular right away, okay? The work is internal. We don't need to go out and fix something right now. We'll get there. But first, let us just get comfortable with being uncomfortable, okay? And then let's listen. Just sit and listen to people of color in our association and people of color in general. Be in relationship with people of color. Support businesses owned by Black and brown people. Diversify your media. Read and listen to Black news media. Read books by people of color. Read blogs by people of color. Listen to podcasts by people of color. Intentionally work so that you can center the experience of people of color rather than whiteness all of the time. And so in closing, I want to lift up again the voice of Black UU, Dr. Takiyah Nur Ahmed. She says, "I have never been able to take for granted that I would be welcome in UU spaces as a Black woman. No matter how long I've been a member, no matter what committees I've served on, or the number of times I've been a GA delegate, I've never been able to take for granted the sense of home and welcome and connection that I see my white UU siblings proudly proclaim." Takiyah is part of Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism. This collective has been working hard on many things lately, including this teach-in, and they have been urging Unitarian Universalist forward. One of the things that they're urging us to do is to adopt an eighth principle. The proposed eighth principle states this: "We, the members of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions." I see absolutely no reason why we should not adopt this eighth principle, and I heartily endorse this effort. Brave people. As Maya Angelou once said, "Do the best you can until you know better. Then, when you know better, do better." I know we're all doing the best we can. It's not perfect. I know I screw up all of the time, and I know that I will continue to do so. This is messy and human and hard. But that's okay. That's okay because healing and wholeness are always possible, and we are a generous people. We can forgive ourselves. We can begin again. We can forgive each other and begin again. We can learn and grow and begin again in love. We value fairness and equity, and we are on our way to a better future together. Together. And so, may we be brave and curious, tender and forgiving with one another. May we offer loving kindness to ourselves and to one another along this journey. We will get there. So may this be. Amen and blessed be.